call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
When we get to the postseason of sports, there is a moment where there is a team that brings out something unique where you say to yourself, that looks really special. Maybe it's in the NHL, for example. You get to the Stanley Cup, and you notice in the early rounds that goaltending is going to be really, really good for one particular team. Or maybe it is in the NBA, when you start realizing there's a rhythm, they're rolling. Even if a player is in or out of the lineup, it doesn't seem to matter. Everyone's contributing. You get to the NFL, and you can kind of see that, too. You can kind of see certain teams and the way they're playing and the way they're sharpening up, even though it's a week-to-week basis. We're getting that feeling with the Philadelphia Phillies. Last night, they beat Arizona 10-0. They're doing it exactly the same way as they've done in every series that they've played so far, leading to the NLCS. They have hitting home runs, and they're getting outstanding starting pitching. Aaron Nola was brilliant last night, but was even more brilliant is the fact that they take fastballs and get them out of the ballpark. Last night, Trey Turner makes a mistake. He comes in the first inning and hits a home run. Kyle Schwarber hit two home runs. They have hit 15 home runs in the last four games. When you get a combination of this, where you get a pitcher like Nola, who goes six innings, strikes out seven, allows just three hits, and you pair that up with Zach Wheeler's performance, and you pair that up with bats that are just flying balls out of ballparks, there is going to be a feeling that something special is brewing. Now, again, a series and a series until the home team loses, we know that cliche, we use it all the time. But the reality of it is, it feels like there is something unique and something special about the way the Philadelphia Phillies are rolling through this postseason. They've only lost one game. And that was to the Atlanta Braves, where Bryce Harper was doubled up on a brilliant catch by Michael Harris. And that's it. That is it. This postseason is starting to really come together. There are just these kind of moments that we notice in sports that we just can feel it. If you're a fan of that particular sport, you don't even have to be a diehard fan to start noticing, hey, this team is going to be a tough out. This team is going to be really different when we get to the playoffs or when we're in the playoffs. And that's the Phillies. They did it last season, en route to the World Series, albeit losing to the Astros, and they're doing it again now. It's contagious, the bats, how many home runs they're hitting. They have 19 home runs in the postseason. Like I said, 15 in the last four games. They have outscored their opponents by 33 runs in the eight playoff games that they have played so far. They have played 72 innings of baseball. They have led after 57 of those. They have trailed in just two. These are remarkable numbers for any playoff team in Major League Baseball. And again, I know Arizona is getting three games at home. And the series could absolutely change on a dime if the Diamondbacks start winning some games at home. The series isn't over. I get it. There's just a feeling something special is brewing with this team that could extend to a championship. And last night was just one of those games. And look, we're in match play. If you know anything about golf and you know how match play works, match play is based hole per hole. It's not based on cumulative score. So if I'm on the tee, I hit it two out of bounds, and I'm standing hitting my fifth shot, and you're down the middle of your fairway, and you hit an iron to the green, I can concede the hole. I can just go, we're done. I'm out. I'm hitting my ninth shot from the bunker. You're putting for birdie. Let's get out of here. There's no nine that's attached to mine. There's no three that's attached to you. Just win the hole. We are in match play. For the Arizona Diamondbacks, Torey Lovullo, if I was him, that's how I would present this. It didn't matter if we won that game, if we lost that game last night, 10-0. It didn't matter if we came back in the ninth inning and scored nine runs and came up short. We could have lost last night 3-2. We could have lost last night 2-1. We could have lost last night 1-0. 10-0 is irrelevant, other than we got to find a way to pitch to these guys so they don't knock every single thing they see out of the ballpark. It's just one game. It's irrelevant what the score is. There's no cumulative factor here. And you've got to erase that. That's to be honest with you, that's one of the beauties of the regular season in Major League Baseball, is that it is so long, and you start learning that you don't carry over the mistakes of game one or game two into game three. You can go into a series in July, for example, lose on a Friday night 11-2, and you can come back on Saturday and win 7-0. And I think that's how Arizona should play it when they get back to Chase Field in Phoenix for Thursday night. That's how I would play it. That's the only way I would play it. Because that, to me, would be from a standpoint of, hey, listen, we've got to get our bats going. Now, we've got to go up. We're going up against Ranger Suarez in Game 3, likely Taiwan Walker in Game 4. Now, for Arizona, they're probably going to be going bullpen in Game 4. That could be a bullpen game for them while they get Gallen and Merrill Kelly ready for the rest of the rest of that series, if they can extend it into a 5 games or a 6-game series. But Nola was lost in all of the home runs. Was Nola's performance last night. He was great. Spotting balls, putting them in locations, getting guys to swing at bad pitches. It was that kind of game. It was that kind of game for his performance. He's a free agent at the end of the season, by the way. He's going to make an absolute boatload of money. But this is the kind of performances where you see in Major League Baseball, when they pop up, you start thinking to yourself over and over again, listen, this Nola's got an ERA less than 1 in the postseason. But starting pitching is an ERA of 1.39 in 8 postseason games. They're an undefeated team at home. I mean, these numbers that have been popping up since the 10-0 loss last night are pretty magnificent. And here's the other thing. It's not just one guy. It's not just two guys. Right? I mean, it can be Castellanos hitting 2 home runs. It can be Kyle Schwarber hitting 2 home runs. It can be Bryce Harper hitting a home run every day. It can be Trey Turner hitting a home run. It can be the defensive player of Alex Bohm. It can be anything that is going on. It's just working for Philadelphia right now. And I do agree. There is one line that one of the players had said yesterday. I think it was Schwarber who was pointing it out to some of the younger players on the team, that postseason baseball is the purest form of baseball. And he's right. Because it when you're talking about 9 innings matter the most, not 9 innings through 162 games. 9 innings matter the most. That is the purest form of baseball. When you use every strategy you have and you don't think about how, the length of this decision, or and you just go play 9 innings to see what happens, and you're using the strategical elements of the game to your advantage, and the other team's trying to use it to their advantage. It's a purest form of baseball. It's what brings out some of the best performances, and the Phillies are bringing out some of the best performances. And it's funny because, again, you look at what's going on in the American League, and we'll get game 3 of that tonight in Texas, in Arlington, where the Rangers have a 2-0 series lead against Houston. There's a feeling like the Astros, all right, they blew 2 games at home, but I trust the Astros on the road. I got to figure out how to trust Arizona at home in order to see the NLCS expand into games 5, game 6, game 7. I've got to trust Arizona will win 1 or 2 games at home at Chase Field to get this back to Philadelphia. I don't know, when you're down 2-0 in a series, especially when you lose both of the first 2 games on the road and you don't have home field advantage, you're in an awkward situation, but it can be done. Saw the Yankees do it in 96. They lost both of their games at home to the Braves, gotten killed, and then won 4 straight and won the World Series. It can be done. Your backs aren't quite to the wall yet. And maybe you can get to Ranger Suarez. I mean, I thought when Ranger Suarez last pitched, he was going up against Spencer Strider. And the sort of conventional wisdom of that matchup was Strider, who was a Cy Young candidate, who had 20 wins and led the majors in strikeouts, was going to be, was going to excel, keep the Braves in the series. And Ranger Suarez outdueled him. And Brandon Pfaadt, who is the rookie pitcher for the Diamondbacks, will go up in game 3. It's a lot to put on the back of a rookie, but he's not expected to go very deep. So we'll see how this is going to play out. Maybe they get a bad outing from Ranger Suarez. The Diamondbacks capitalize it, and we have a more interesting conversation about Taiwan Walker in Game 4 and a bullpen game for the Diamondbacks in Game 4 before they reset their rotation and get their stars back for Game 5. Maybe we'll have that conversation. Maybe Ranger Suarez pitches well like he did when he went up against Spencer Strider in the NLDS. And we might be talking about the possibility of the Phillies chilling out for a while. One other point that was made by, I want to give it proper credit, was The Athletic. There's three games in Arizona. The Phillies need two to advance to the World Series. If they get that, again, it's putting the cart way before the horse. Forgive me, but putting the cart way before the horse. They won't play at Citizens Bank Park until October 30th. So it is going to be a long time before they go back to Citizens Bank Park if they wrap up the series in Arizona, because they've got to go play either Houston or Texas. The first two games will be in the American League ballpark for both of those teams. So that's what I saw last night, a remarkable game from the Philadelphia side. But if the Diamondbacks have just got to put this one away, four hits, no runs, terrible outing, terrible. Got to get the bats swinging, got to get the bats moving, but nevertheless, going home, reset the button. It's one game. It is not, you're not down. You know, you look at this series, for example, and they lost game one 5-3. You're not down 15-3, you know, cumulative score. You're only down 2-0. Get a game, get game three. You get hope to even up the series in game four. Lose game three, and the Phillies are likely going to be sitting around waiting to find out who wins the ALCS. Unless that one's quick, too. All right, coming up, we'll talk some NFL as we are at the halfway point of the week. So we still, at this point, we look back on some of the games in week number 6, look ahead to week number 7. By the way, it starts on Thursday night. It is New Orleans against Jacksonville.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so Thursday Night Football will be Jacksonville against New Orleans at the Superdome. Gardner Minshew. Why do I think the backup quarterback now for the Jacksonville Jaguars? I was thinking it was Gardner Minshew, but it's not. It's because he's in Indianapolis starting there. He might play, whoever the backup quarterback for Jacksonville is, because Trevor Lawrence is nursing an injury. Aren't they all nursing injuries now?
Every single one of them.
Everybody's nursing injuries now. It's like your timeline of NFL news is this quarterback went to the hospital for a back injury, Jimmy Garoppolo. You got this quarterback dealing with a neck injury, Daniel Jones. You got this quarterback dealing with an ankle injury, those Trevor Lawrence. Oh, no, I'm sorry, he's got a knee injury. You've got other, like Anthony Richardson is now out for the year in Indianapolis. That's where the Gardner Minshew thought came into my head. You've got just constantly quarterbacks, constantly Justin Fields, dislocated finger. Like just all of these quarterbacks are hurt. And now all of these backups are starting to emerge. I should do a list. I should make an Excel sheet of every backup quarterback in the NFL. Because we were talking about this yesterday, where some of these guys are complete unknowns, where they play at small schools and you never heard of them before.
Yeah, what's the guy's name again? Shepherd University.
Shepherd.
I've never even heard of it.
The Bears backup quarterback. Yeah.
Tyson.
Never heard of him.
Bagel or something like that.
So we Bagel. It's a Bagent.
Bagent. Same thing, right?
Bagel, whatever. With the nice lox and a little bit of cream cheese.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, you've got all of these quarterbacks that are hurt, and now you've got this world of backup quarterbacks. This is the big dilemma, isn't it, in football? Isn't this the big dilemma where we've got this old school mentality that we want our football to be rough, we want our football to be violent, we want our football to be played by men, we want our football to be like the Alcola, you know, hard hits video that you used to see, but in the end we don't want a guy like Tyson Bagent starting an NFL game, that we don't want to go looking on depth charts of teams to find out who's who and who's going to play. CJ Beathard is the backup quarterback in Jacksonville. He might play Thursday night. We don't want to know who the backup quarterback is. I mean, we've already got a shortage of legitimate starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So it's a catch-22 because if you play a more violent game, if you go back to the real roots of football, what you're going to end up is more of this. And the owners are like, no, no, no. There's no way I'm paying a guy $52 million a year to have him out for an entire season, because we can alter the rules to protect our most valuable asset. And in any other business, you would say that's important. That's true. If somehow, some way, the, I don't know, just off the top of my head, the computer business had to change the way it did business to sort of protect one of its biggest assets, you would say, yeah, that's what businesses do. That's what CEOs do. And yet when we do it in the NFL, we get this incredible backlash that comes pouring in over the walls from people who are saying, you're messing with my football. You're messing with the thing I love. You're changing it. I don't even recognize it anymore. But it's a different world. Again, I do the same thing. If I was paying a guy $50 million to do a job for me that not very many people could do, I'd have him in bubble wrap. Seriously, if I owned a business, right, whatever business that is, let's say I had a computer programmer, and the computer programmer makes me billions, and I pay him $50 million a year, I'd have him shuttled to work. I'd hire security. I mean, if that was the only guy that could do the programming, I would make sure that guy was wrapped in protective cloth coming into the office every single day. So in a way, you can't blame the NFL for this, but I get it. I get it on the other side, man. I do. I get it. It's almost like you watch a game and your defensive player wraps a quarterback up and brings him down, and here comes the flag. Piece of yellow goes flying, and you know immediately, you're like, oh God, what are we doing? Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. But at the same time, if you have a Thursday night game where C.J. Beathard is the starting quarterback, and he's going up against the New Orleans Saints, and let's say Derek Carr had a cold and he was going up against Jameis Winston, you'd be like, oh God, here's a Thursday night game. It is perplexing. But let's get back to baseball real quick. So last night, I don't know, I found myself, okay, I sometimes will see a game, like in the NBA, for example. I will see a game where one team is blowing out another, and I will go, I wonder how much this could be at the end of the game. Like, they've got a 30-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Could they get it to 40? Could they get, and I'll just have it on just to see. And last night, I wasn't watching for some Diamondbacks comeback. I was like, how many home runs can this Phillies team hit in one game?
Can everyone get one?
Yeah. I was like, I mean, that's basically, plus it was the only thing on. So, it wasn't like I was, filled with other options, other games to watch. But I was going, how many home runs can this team hit? It's one after another, after another, after another.
I mean, for a while, that was the only way they scored.
Yeah, right.
First
three runs were home runs. And then they started getting RBI doubles. You know, Realmuto hit a two-run double, and Marsh had a double. And, they started pouring it on in other ways. But by the time I get to, like, the fourth, fifth inning, I was like, they've already hit three. Are they going to hit seven when this game's over? Seriously, that's all they've done. 18 home runs in the postseason, 15 in the last four games.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
It's, I mean, like I said to you during the break, I was like, there's one word that I saw that described them, the machine.
Machine. Yeah.
And that's all it is. They are like a factory of home runs right now.
They are. And
and they're outputting so many.
The other thing is that they have found a way, and they did it last year too, because last year's run to the World Series was a little surprising because they went through the Braves, right? And they got through the Braves. Braves were like, oh, yeah. But they're knowing how to do this in October. They have now gone, look, this is when you play your best baseball, and we're going to play our best baseball. And they have. Like I was saying earlier, all of the numbers that are pointing to how well this postseason has gone for them. It's remarkable what they've been able to do in the playoffs, from the two-game wild card to the three-game, three wins in the NLDS to now two wins in the NLCS. eight games, 72 innings. They've led after 57. They've only trailed in two out of the 72. That means 70 of the 72 innings, they're either leading after that inning or it's tied at the end of that inning. That is very, very good baseball. It is pitching that is keeping you in games and bats that are making these things done very early. That's a great combination to have. They're not hitting home runs to protect starting pitching, and starting pitching isn't performing to protect the weak bats. They are strong bats and strong starting pitching, and they've done it since the second we started the postseason. That's how good they've been. And so it does, again, I'm not going to say its series is over. I've seen stranger things in sports. But what I'm saying is that there is a feeling with this Phillies team that you get when you see an NHL team that's got exceptional goaltending where you're like, yeah, nothing's getting by him. He's on a roll now. Or even like an NBA team where you just start seeing things come together for a team in a series early in the first round, second round. You start saying, okay, watch out. There's something rolling along with them. NFL, it's a little harder to do because you don't carry momentum. It's you have a week and then you have another week off. But we've seen it in the NFL too, where we've seen a wild card team and they seem to click, and you go, wow, maybe that is going to they are going to be tough. That's this Phillies team.
Well, now what it feels like too is, like, I mean, they're seeing everything as a beach ball.
You're right,
coming down the plate.
That's,
I mean,
without question.
Every single time you come up and you're just looking at them, like, you know, I know the Diamondbacks are a good team. They got good pitching.
Yeah,
it's just that, you know, for whatever reason, the Phillies can't miss right now.
No, and the other thing, too, is what you want when you get into the postseason, you want your bats to be hot, but you want the top two pitchers in your rotation to go undefeated. And both of these guys are undefeated. Nola got his third win. He's 3-0. Wheeler is 2-0 in the postseason.
And I like what you said in the first segment, was that in all of this, Nola's performance is lost.
Right.
Like, you know, right. We're not even talking about Nola. And he was incredible.
Nola is 3-0, and he has allowed two runs.
Yeah, that's efficient.
In 18 innings pitched, he has 19 strikeouts. And
he's not the story.
No,
with the Phillies,
he's not
right.
Right.
Now.
He's not the story. And he's not the story. So, I mean, it's got to be tough. And look, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, and this is a team that is going to be coming on. This is a team that's going to be around. As young as they are, this might just be the one moment where you go, let's get at, when we're done with this, let's build on this. Because we're a year or two, you know, we were a year or two early.
You can almost say they're overachieving.
Overachieving.
You know,
I've seen plenty of teams go on to have success overachieving early. You're running into, like you said, a machine. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. As we continue along, it is Wake Up Call. I am, I was thinking about this the other day. It was like, I'm at that point now in the baseball playoffs where are they still doing that steal a base taco thing in the World Series? Do they still do that?
They got to.
But because I'm thinking to myself, with all of the incentives now to steal bases with the larger bases and stuff, did they pull back on that a little bit? And they go, oh, no, hold on. We don't want to give it away right away. Now, I love baseball playoffs. I really do. I don't watch a lot during the regular season. I'm not I knew friends when I was kind of growing up, or like early in my career, I knew a lot of diehard Red Sox fans that would watch every night. Like every night the Red Sox were on. And I was not that person that I watched every night. I will throw the Braves on here just because they're the local team, essentially, in Nashville. But I'm not a diehard sit down, watch every game, complain about every game, because I know it's a long season. But I love the atmosphere in postseason baseball. I love that feeling of just watching that crowd hang on every pitch, hang on every breath, waiting. But last night, it was almost what was the problem last night was the drama of the game was gone early, and then the Phillies were just partying. I mean, the fans were just having a good time, just rolling along as the runs kept coming across. Here's another RBI double. Here's another run scored early in the game, home runs. But when it's good, like when you are fighting back, when you are in a 5-4 game or 3-2 game, it is intense. It is really intense. So, all right, well, tonight is the ALCS continuing. It's in Arlington at Globe Life Stadium. It's going to be Max Scherzer getting a start against Christian Javier. Is that right?
Yes.
Christian Javier is getting the start for the Astros?
I think so, yeah.
I'm trying to do that off the top of my head. I'm trying to remember. And then that's the only game on tonight. And then Thursday, they are going back to the two-game kind of doubleheader.
And, you know, I mean, it's in the complete opposite of the Phillies. Astros' bats have gone silent.
Very much
except for
so.
Yordan Alvarez.
Yep, except Yordan Alvarez. Very much
he
so.
Always seems to, he always seems to be that guy. But everyone else, nothing.
That's right. All right, I want to bring this up because I kind of made a mistake, I guess, in YouTube algorithms. So sometimes I will sit and I have one of those smart TVs. We got the apps, and one of the apps is YouTube. And so sometimes I'll go on. I've been watching some like video game tutorials because I stink at video games, and I just bought a couple that I want to play. So I've gotten, and then I see some sports stuff and whatnot. And now I was a little addicted to one commentator's comments on Deion Sanders, and that is Jason Whitlock, who now works for the Blaze. Talks a little bit more politics, but he's been getting on these Deion rants that I found a little interesting. I don't agree with them as much, but I found them interesting. And yesterday, the algorithm said, "Oh, apparently you like this. You like him. Here's a thing he did on football." And I went, "All right, what is he talking about football?" And he was talking about how the NFL stock is declining. Now, listen, Whitlock is a polarizing guy. He's a lot more conservative these days, which is kind of he's kind of leaning into the political realm. That's where a lot of the money is made in this sort of talk business, if you can get on that side. He's always been a sort of outspoken columnist. He's been a very controversial columnist. I met him at a Broncos game once, and he suggested we were in the food line, and he suggested to me, we were just talking a little TV, and he mentioned The Wire, and I'd never seen The Wire before, and then I finally went and watched it, and it was great, and I saw him again like a year or two later and told him how great it was. But over his career, he's been very, very controversial, and he's been riding this Deion thing. He must have known that people click on the Deion stuff. His algorithms must have been like, man, I'm getting more hits on Deion hate. From the people who love Deion, the people who hate Deion. So I'm just going to roll with that because he's got a comment on Deion all the time. But this thing on football was really bizarre because I was bringing it up earlier where I was talking about how, you know, you got all these quarterbacks that are getting injured and owners want to change the game. And his point was the NFL stock is dropping. And it's dropping because teams don't practice anymore because of the collective bargaining agreement and the play is awful. He was pointing out like last weekend on Sunday, there were only like two teams that scored over 28 points or whatever it was. And the football, it's miserable football and it's terrible. And the play, it's just garbage and it's not like it used to be. And he was just going on this thing about how Roger Goodell is like Enron, right? It's a scam. It's all a scam. And if you had stock in the NFL, you better sell it because it's going to crash. It's going to explode. He was just doing the thing you would do, you know, where you take something and you get really hyperbolic about it. But it got me thinking for a second. And I kind of rolled my eyes at this because I've heard this from a bunch of people all through the last couple of years, right? The NFL is now flag football. It's terrible. It's awful. It's not the same game. I remember back in the old days when it used to be like this and the old days used to be like that and it was so much better. Haven't we heard this many, many times throughout the history of sports? Doesn't matter what sport it is. Haven't we heard this about basketball? How much it was more free-flowing in this era, then it got more defensive in this era, and then it got more bogged down in this era, then it got back to this era, and then the three-point shooting changed the game. How many times have we seen it in baseball? They just went crazy with a whole bunch of rules to change the game, to make it faster, to make it more exciting, to make it better, right? The defensive shift. You can disagree or agree with that, but they realized that there was some issue with that. They wanted to change it. The NFL is no different than any sport. It evolves over where you see things that you cannot, it cannot be sustainable, and you make rule changes. And you know what? People will either take it or leave it. They'll either love it or hate it. They'll either think it's the best thing in the world, or they'll wish for the good old days. Whitlock is in that category. He's in that category of, it was better in my time. It was better in the old days. It was better when it used to be more physical and rougher and tougher. And in a way, I will agree with that. Do I agree that the NFL stock is plummeting? Well, let's put this in context for a second. What does he mean by that? Does he mean that there's the general interest is waning? Well, I don't think the numbers are popping up like that. Right, the Jets Eagles game, for example, drew and this is the second. This is the part two of the doubleheader. This was a late afternoon game. So depending on where you live, it was like the 4 o'clock game on the East Coast, the 1 o'clock game on the West Coast. It was Eagles Jets, and it was watched by 26 million people. Now again, it's New York, it's Philadelphia, those two major markets. But that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And of course it was an interest because the Eagles were struggling and the game was close. And I do think that the Jets have become a story. I think the Jets have become a really interesting second story in the NFL. They lose Aaron Rodgers. The season is over. Here comes Zach Wilson. He stinks. He's terrible. Oh my God, he should be thrown out of town. Then he has this one good game and a loss to Kansas City. Then he goes beats Denver. Now, even though he didn't play great, he's still the quarterback of the winning team. They go on and beat Philadelphia, and they do so without Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed. And now the Jets have evened up their record to 3-3. Aaron Rodgers is throwing the ball on the sidelines. They are a secondary story to the largeness of the sport. But here's the other problem. Let me ask you, Ron is a Charger fan. I'm a Steeler fan. I know many, whatever fan you are, okay? I love when my team wins, all right? I love it. I love that part of sports where I root for something and it comes to fruition. I get a little down when they lose. I root for something so hard and it disappoints me. It's part of the lore of sports, the unscripted result, right? If you go to a movie and the writer wrote a bad ending, you get a bad ending. Some may like it, some may, but you get what the writer gave you.
Yeah, and sometimes, like when you're a fan, you almost get to the point of Charger fan, that lady.
Right, right, exactly. So what he's saying is the overall quality of play is so bad it's driving people away from the sport. And the NFL is not a restaurant. Right. If I go to a restaurant and the food is awful and it keeps getting awful and they don't make it better, I eventually stop going. Eventually, everyone stops going and that's it. The NFL pulls you in on emotion, like all sports. But let's just use the NFL because that's what he was talking about. It pulls you in with emotion. I can watch the Steelers play the Browns, for example, and I can say, man, this is not a well-played game. But the result of the game is what I'm interested in. Now, when you throw in fantasy and when you throw in gambling, the results of these games are starting to matter a lot more to people. So in the end, is that a stock that you think is declining? Now, I may agree with him. Like if I was in a room with him and we were discussing the quality of play of the NFL today versus yesteryear, I might agree with him. I might say, you know, yeah, I kind of noticed that too. The tackling isn't as good, you know, little things like that. But I disagree with him that because of that, this is a sinking ship. This is not a sinking ship. It is a ship that continues to attract you in, drag you in with results. Your team just won. Your team lost. Your team's in trouble. Your team's leading the division. Oh, that paid off. That parlay paid off. That bet, that over-under paid off. Your fantasy player did well. Your fantasy player didn't do well. Your fantasy player is going to start this weekend. Your fantasy player is benched. You add all those elements in, it's not a dying stock. It's just a different stock.
Wake-up call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, you brought up that Charger fan. I guess we found out she is not a plant. Is that true?
That's what she says.
That's what she says. She actually is a diehard Charger fan, yep. The woman from Monday Night Football.
Apparently, she is not hired by the NFL.
No, she is not. Now, they found her. Pat McAfee found her. She was coming on there, and then she, I think she's on some other shows.
Oh, I think she's going to make all the rounds.
Yeah, but you know what? Enjoy it now, because it's going to end.
It'll end before the week. Week's right. over.
But what else are you going to talk to her about? Like, the first person to get her breaks the myth, but after that, she just becomes a fan like any other fan. Like, after a while, it's like, I'm not that interested in her background.
How long have you been a Chargers fan? How many jerseys do you own?
Yeah, exactly.
After a while,
I'm like, you know what? Why am I caring about this? So they caught a emotional fan at a Chargers game. Now I'm supposed to know everything about her?
Well, that is a rarity, Tony.
You're right, a Charger fan.
Yeah, I mean, that's like finding, you know, the second Mona Lisa.
Well, I found you.
Yeah, but I'm talking about emotional Charger fan.
Oh, emotional Charger fan.
You know, those aren't
I think that's what drew the conspiracy. I think the conspiracy was that nobody could be this high and emotional over the Chargers.
Right? You know, I mean, the one question I would ask her would be, it's like, hey, you know, you look like you're a diehard Charger fan. How many games did you go watch them play at Home Depot?
Right, exactly.
the soccer stadium.
That's right. Like, what's one thing we could say we've all eaten before? Like maybe a Big Mac or McDonald's burger. And like, imagine if somebody was at a McDonald's and they were like eating the burger, and you looked over and they were like, "Oh, this is
crying,
amazing!" Just like in tears, like, this is so delicious. I can't." And you'd be like, never had one before?
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, that's the way it felt like. Like, is she that emotional over a team that doesn't really elicit that kind of energy?
You know, is it the extra bun that's doing it?
Right, exactly. is it the special Thousand Island dressing sauce?
No, secret sauce, Tony. Secret.
Sauce. That's not Thousand Island dressing?
It's not Thousand Island dressing.
Isn't it ketchup, mayonnaise, and relish?
Pretty much.
That's pretty much it. But yeah, no, so she's like, I was a Minnesota Vikings fan until I moved to Los Angeles in 2017. I'm like, does that mean you gave up your Minnesota Vikings because you switched locations? I never lived in Pittsburgh, and I've been a Steelers fan for 40 plus years. Right? You find your team and you stay with them. But it's okay to, is it okay to be a fan of a team and then and like or be passionate about the local team? So if you, like you. Is it okay for you to have a Texans jersey?
I guess.
Is it okay for somebody to go, you know what? My family and I just moved to Atlanta from Wisconsin. We were Packers fans, but you know what? Atlanta, the Falcons, I kind of like it.
When I first moved to Houston, I was gifted a Texans hat.
Okay. That's nice.
I was told to go to the team store and buy one that I liked and it's like, you know, I'm a Chargers fan, but it's like, no, but you know, you're in Texas now. You're in Houston. I'm going to buy you a Texans hat.
Okay.
So I did. And I wore it. It's still in my closet. I don't wear it that often anymore. But I mean, does that make me less of a Chargers fan?
Well, that's a little different. You're not wearing it. You're not supporting the Texans.
Yeah.
You're not.
I mean, I've gone
like this woman was on TV emotionally up and emotionally down over the Chargers, and it made me go, how did you get that secondary fandom?
Right.
Because I've tried in the places I've lived over my career. I covered the Broncos. I was in the practice facility. I knew the team. I knew the players. I never, ever rooted or had an emotional effect about the Broncos like I do the Steelers. Like, they never drew a sadness, depression. Like, I can remember when I was young, I remember that Chargers AFC title game. I had to take a walk. I was so angry. I was one of those kids that was like everything was around my team. And it was 1994, and I remember taking a walk outside, and it was wintertime. And I remember going, I can't believe this. They lost. I had them. They were going to the Super Bowl. All they needed to do was win at home. Like, I used to get like that. I never got that way with the Broncos, covering them for 10 years and knowing the organization. Because when you're in this business, you end up rooting for people. Like, you end up rooting for you meet people, you end up liking them, and you kind of go, I'd like to see you be successful. And here in Tennessee, I've been in Tennessee for 10, 11 years, never felt that way about the Titans like I do the Steelers. So you're not that way with the Texans, but you have a hat.
I have a hat.
So, all right.
You know, and there are times like, you know, there are times like in, I guess, I don't know if you can't help it, but you end up rooting for the team just a little bit.
Well, no, that's okay. You know, I'm not saying don't, be apathetic.
Like I'm happy for the Texans that they're doing well.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but if, you know, obviously same with you, if it comes down between Titans and Steelers, it's a clear cut.
No, I have no problems. I mean, like, look, if the Titans are in the playoffs and the Steelers aren't, I'll be like, sure, why not?
Yeah, and you can't help become a bit of a fan because it's, you know, that's what you hear all the time.
Right. Sure. But that's not what I mean. Like, she was so passionate. Your first reaction would be, that girl must have lived and died with the Chargers her whole life. And then you find out, no, 5-6 years ago, she was a diehard Minnesota Vikings fan. That's why people thought it was a conspiracy. Because they were saying, wait, hold on, this doesn't add up. They're like, how is she a diehard Vikings fan and a diehard Chargers fan when most of us aren't diehards of two teams? We may want a team to win, we may root for a team to win, but we're not sweating and screaming and yelling about team two. Right? Team one, yes. Team two, that's what they thought. But she's like, nope, I was in Minnesota. I grew up in Minnesota. I moved to Los Angeles. I adopted a team, and I adopted the Chargers. Okay, I can buy that. I guess. But apparently she's not an actor. By the way, would it have been a big scandal if we found out she was? Like, if we found out she was on the NFL payroll?
Plant.
Yeah, like, if we find out, Let's say we found out yesterday that, holy cow, the NFL found this woman and gave her a jersey. She's an actress.
Or if you heard that, yeah, you remember the cameraman that copped you? He's missing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, right.
NFL and calling in, like, you know, KGB.
Would we go, oh, how dare they? We'd go, yeah, the NFL, what are you going to do? They're just trying to drum up public interest in the Chargers, I guess. Right, I don't think it would have been. I didn't think it was a massive Woodward and Birdstein investigation into whether or not this woman was a plant or not. I thought it was really fun. Fun's probably a weak word. I was trying to think of something else, but it was neat. Like to see her being emotional at the game. It was like, that's great. That's what this is about. This is what it is. This is why sports is awesome. It's like you can live and die. It's not life or death, but it feels like it's extremely important. Really, really important. Because it is. Like it really is. I've said I never ever discount emotion when it comes to sports. It is. We care about this stuff. Shouldn't care about it as much as we do, but I'm glad we do. I don't have a problem.
Like I said, I mean, Monday night game. I was so mad at Buck and Aikman. I can't remember which one said it, but they were talking about how Justin Herbert hadn't been snacked. They've been able to control Micah Parsons, and right on cue, boom.
But why are you mad at them?
It was just because I knew it was coming. As soon as they said it, I was like, oh, he's going to get sacked right now.
But do you believe in that?
No, I don't, but it always happens, Tony.
Okay. Because my thing is that you were like, when you said, I was watching that game Monday night, I was so mad at Buck and Aikman. And you didn't say, I was mad at Justin Herbert because he missed an open Keenan Allen.
Oh, no, that was frustrating. Right. I knew right there. I was like, he's seeing stars. Literally.
You're more mad at something mythical.
Yes.
Than something that actually did take place, that actually was a failure of execution.
Because my guy can't do any wrong. Those two did.
Right.
That's the fandom. Then he threw that interception, and just, you know, I didn't even stick around. You know, a lot of times I like to watch the post-game interviews. I turned it off. I'm done. It's like,
Philip on Twitter, that was me when I lived in Houston, but everyone knows I'm a Dolphins guy first and foremost. I support the Texans. I'll watch their games. But if the two sides play each other, it's Miami all day. Yeah, I tell that story all the time. When I was at the AFC title game between Denver and Pittsburgh, I thought I'd root for Denver because my boss said, if the Broncos go to the Super Bowl, you are going to spend a week at the Super Bowl working for the company, not just the station. I was going to be doing Super Bowl hits for the entire company, like all seven stations that we had. I was going to be on all the stations. I was the man. I was the main man. So I was really excited about that opportunity. But when the Steelers converted their first third down, I was like, oh, thank God.
What about this? What have you become a fan of the Predators over other hockey teams?
Yeah, I did. I never was a big diehard NHL team guy. I never had a real team. But I've found myself rooting for the Predators.
See, I became that way with the Dynamo.
Yeah.
Like, I'll consider myself a Dynamo fan over a Galaxy fan.
I just didn't grow up with hockey on my television. So even the Bruins, I couldn't follow them because I didn't watch them like I did the Celtics. But yeah, no, I will root for the Predators. You know, I like the Avalanche in Colorado, but I'm not an NHL guy.